slucas.me presents. Hello and welcome. I'm Sean from slucas.me, sometimes known as Noob Dad, either 76 or 131, depending on which platform you're on. Hence the name of the show, Noobs Book Club. In this particular episode, like the last episode, I'm catching up on some of my movie versus episodes, and I'm going to do Jurassic Park. The last time I did Project Hail Mary, I postponed Contact because I couldn't get around to reading it with the crazy end of school year and beginning of summer, so I will do that at some point in the future. I'm not entirely sure when. I will let you know as soon as I figure it out. Next month, I'm going to do The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is a reread for me, and then I'm going to read War Wizard, the new book from the Dragonlance duo, Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman. I'm not sure how long this episode's going to end up being. I usually try to shoot for around 20 minutes or so, but this one might come in a little bit less than that. Not that I don't have a ton to say about it, but I just jotted down a few things in my notes, and it doesn't look like it's going to take much longer than 15 minutes to wrap everything up. If you're expecting a longer episode, I apologize. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, I'm sure those episodes will be much longer because there's a ton to say about those particular books. I think that's enough for introduction. Let's get right into it. Michael Crichton's Jurassic Park novel is much darker, it's gorier, it's more scientifically focused. I mentioned in Project Hail Mary that Andy Weir always struck me as Michael Crichton for Filthy Casuals, because Crichton always jams as much science and math and technology into his books as he can, and he often explains them, but he doesn't explain them as simply as Andy Weir does. He's usually on a higher level, even with his explanations. But then it got turned into a film, as you all know. It shifted the tone towards a thrilling family-friendly adventure. The book, as it was written, wouldn't have worked as a summer blockbuster. So I think they worked with Crichton in order to write the script for the movie, and they shifted the focus away from the horror elements. It's still scary in some parts, the T-Rex part and the Dilophosaurus when it kills Newman. Those parts are pretty scary, but overall it's more of a thriller than an actual horror film, which Crichton's books are more horror-focused, more focused on the horror of technology and unfettered capitalism and that kind of stuff, but horror nonetheless. The book itself focused heavily on chaos theory, the science, as I mentioned, corporate greed, as I just talked about. I call it unfettered capitalism, the dangers of unchecked ambition. So we're seeing that again in our lifetime with our illustrious president, who has never been told no, and for some reason people are still not telling him no, and I'm not entirely sure why. Like, I don't understand why people don't stand up in the middle of a meeting and say, this guy is sleeping. This is a meeting that he called and that he considers important, and he's sleeping. So, I don't know. I don't get it. When I first read the book, I don't think I realized that. I mean, I wasn't as keyed in, clued into that side of things, like capitalism as the problem. And then I saw a meme that was like, people often mistake that the science went wrong in Jurassic Park, but the science actually went right. It was the fact that they try too hard to make it into a profitable thing, or they try too hard to make it into a quote-unquote zoo for dinosaurs, which is a silly thing when you think about it. But if you look at it through the capitalist lens of, we're going to make so much money, then it kind of makes sense, at least to that mindset. Next, I'm going to talk about some of the main character differences. In the book, John Hammond is actually the primary antagonist. He's an egotistical cutthroat billionaire. He is obsessed with profit and unconcerned with safety. The movie transforms him into a whimsical, grandfatherly visionary who just wants to bring joy to children. It was a movie of its time. I think if they made it now, they would lean more into the evil billionaire personality. He keeps saying, "Spare no expense, just make this the greatest thing that people have ever seen." And then the lawyer, who I'll talk about in a little bit, says that they want to squeeze as much profit out of it. He says, "Nonsense, we just want kids to have fun." So I think it was definitely a movie of its time, and if they made it now, they would lean more into him as a billionaire, or maybe they would have another billionaire who influenced him or who pulled him away from just being a guy who wanted to basically build a zoo for or a theme park, I guess. I mean, that's what Arnold says, that it's a theme park and a zoo, so that's probably why I'm having so much fun defining it. But there would be another billionaire who was like kind of pulling the strings behind the scenes or something like that to keep Hammond as the grandfatherly guy. Who knows? Alan Grant, the book features a Grant who actually loves children, unlike his movie counterpart who comes out and says that he hates kids at the beginning. I think that's just a typical movie trope of giving him the redemption arc of going from not liking children to tolerating the children to understanding that adults are here to take care of the children and keep them safe. And he actually ends up enjoying that role as a fatherly figure or a parental figure, if you will. The kids have their ages flipped in the book. Tim is an older dinosaur-obsessed brother, while Lex is the younger, annoying, uninterested in everything going on. In the movie, she makes her the older sibling and also gives her the crucial computer skills to save the park. If the movie were made today, the Chuds would scream woke because they made a woman, well, a young woman, a person who actually thinks and works for herself and helps to solve the problems. Just goes to show how far society has fallen in that regard, I think. Ian Malcolm, Jeff Goldblum's movie portrayal, is famously suave and charming. I mean, everybody talks about Jeff Goldblum. That's one of the first things that comes up, is his portrayal of Ian Malcolm and how he made him into a much more engaging personality in the movie. In the book, he's more stoic, he's philosophical, he is cynical, just like Goldblum is in the movie. I guess he's more skeptical than cynical, but especially towards the end, you can read him as cynical. That's the famous line from the movie, is that "I bring scientists, you bring a rock star," about Ian Malcolm, which I think of all the changes from the book to the movie, that's probably the one that works the best, because if you think about what Ian Malcolm actually is, he's a physicist who specializes in chaos theory, and those guys are, at least the ones that I've met, are famously kind of quirky and a little off the deep end, because you almost have to be to consider the things that they think about on a daily basis. So I mentioned Gennaro earlier. In the movie, he's a scrawny coward eaten on the toilet. In the novel, he takes the role of Lex and helps to fix the systems. He's actually a heroic figure in the book. Michael Crichton. He loves his lawyers, and I guess Stephen King does not, or I don't know who made the call there to switch him into a smarmy piece of shit, but I guess it's the famous sort of characteristics of lawyers that they're scheming and smarmy and only care about money and one thing. It's, wow, yeah. I guess there's some anti-Semitism there, almost, although it doesn't make sense coming from Spielberg, but I think there is probably that layer of underneath the classical lawyer characterization. Anyway, I don't want to get into that right now because it is not my place to say right here. Dr. Henry Wu, the lead geneticist, has a much larger role in the book. He manages the park's biological mishaps, but he's killed by raptors. He does famously live in the movie, and then I hate what they did with his character later on. I really liked Wu and what he brought to the movie and to the story, and then later on, when they made him an evil scientist, I felt like that was a cop out, and I think he ended up getting a redemption arc at some point. I don't remember. There's been so many movies, I don't remember what's happened in all of them, but I think they finally brought him around because I remember saying to Quinn when we were watching one of the movies that I hated what they did to Wu, but then they brought him back around and made him into a more sympathetic figure towards the end. I know they have to have villains, and I guess giving Dr. Wu a villain arc was the shocking thing that they were going for, but shocking twist that they were going for, but I still think it was kind of lazy and stupid to take him and make him a villain. I did not like it at all. I guess I've covered that over the last minute or so. Anyway, that's some of the differences in the characters, the major characters, I guess, from the book to the movie. I understand most of the changes because, like I say, with Hammond, you want him to be, I guess, more sympathetic because if he's less sympathetic on the screen, then you're not going to root necessarily for the Park to succeed. I saw a meme or something a while ago that said, my toxic trait is no matter what happened, if they built Jurassic Park, I would still want to go. And that's kind of how I feel about it, and I think that's how a lot of people feel about it. And much of that goes to the fact that they made Hammond a more sympathetic, grandfatherly type figure who cares about you and cares about the fun that you will have in his park. Grant, again, they gave him the redemption arc, which I think works as a movie. In the book, you don't have those sort of turns, I guess, as much, so to speak, where obviously there's character development in books, but you don't often have those quick redemption arcs that pull at your heartstrings in a book as much. That's more of a movie thing because they got to keep you hooked and interested for an hour and a half, even though you paid for the movie, so it'd be kind of silly to not be interested, but that's still one of the things that they attach to movies to keep you hooked for longer. The kids, I don't think it makes that much difference switching their ages, other than, like I say, they wanted to make Lex the girl power that was big in the 90s, obviously, and now, like I say, because I have no idea what happened. Something COVID broke a lot of people's brains, and now they just scream woke when a woman or young woman has any kind of agency or power in a movie. And then Tim as the dinosaur obsessed kid. I mean, that's every boy is obsessed with dinosaurs at some point in their life, so making him the younger kid and obsessed with dinosaurs, but also he's got a brain behind him too, because he talks to Grant about all the things that he's read about dinosaurs, and he tries to have a conversation with Grant, which is kind of funny, but also it hits close to home for us because we have our youngest is obsessed with dinosaurs, but he also reads a lot, so he would be very much like Tim. Anytime my wife finds out a dinosaur fact, she mentions it to our youngest, and he says, yeah, I already knew that, which is funny to listen to the two of them talk about that. The change that worked the most was Ian Malcolm for sure. He fit much better in the movie the way that Jeff Goldblum played him, and he offered both comic relief but also a serious side, and his explanation of chaos theory is much better than the butterfly effect that people always try to explain it with, although he did mention the butterfly effect, and then he goes on to further explain it, which I appreciate because I hate that people use the butterfly effect because they misunderstand it completely when they use that silly way to describe or explain it. Gennaro and Wu, I think that they could have given Wu more of a part in the first book, and then making him a villain is the worst thing I think they did in the movies, and changing Gennaro to a sniveling POS lawyer is just playing into the hands of people who already think that about lawyers, which I'm sure it's true about some lawyers, and we've been watching Better Call Saul again, so it's the same kind of thing there where he's the sneaky, underhanded lawyer, con man. It's a very common trope in movies and television that probably wouldn't work as well in a book form because it's too cartoonish and typical, so to speak. I'll talk briefly about the tone, the gore, and how the dinosaurs. For violence, the novel features significantly more profanity and gore. Dinosaur attacks are brutally vivid, describing spilled guts and ripped limbs. The opener in both cases sets the tone for the movie. In the book, the opener is much more violent and it sets up more of a mystery than the movie. The movie goes more for the implied violence of what's happening inside of the raptor cage instead of actually showing the gore and the violence. I mean, it gets somewhat gory where you see the guy's arm that was ripped off, but most of the violence is implied and not really shown on screen. The raptors and the dinosaurs in the book, the dinosaurs are much smarter, more numerous, there's more of them, and they're more persistent. The Dilophosaurus is actually 10 feet tall instead of the smaller size in the movie, and it has much more potent foamy venom. Both of those things are practical. The effects at the time, I'm sure, were very expensive. I mean, the movie was guaranteed to be a hit because it's one of those movies that I tell my kids I saw in the theater either opening day or opening weekend. It was when my friend and I were in Maryland visiting his father, and we went to see the movie, and we were both blown away by it. And then I couldn't wait to share it with my kids when I had them. And then the youngest loves the series, all the way to watching the Camp Cretaceous show that they put on Netflix. The middle is kind of indifferent, and the oldest was frightened of one of the, I think it was Jurassic World, he was really scared by. He ended up running into the other room. He was so frightened by it. It's hit or miss when you have kids whether things work out the way that you hope them to. And the violence, they toned the violence down so that you could get the PG-13 and get that bigger box office so that people would show up with their kids and watch the movie about dinosaurs and buy the action figures and the toys and everything. One of the book's most terrifying scenes, where Alan and the kids are rafting down a jungle river while being hunted by the T-Rex, it was cut from the film, although they did bring it back in Jurassic Park 3, and then it inspired one of the scenes in the most recent Jurassic World movie as well. Whenever people talk about these movies as cash grabs or talks about anything as cash grabs, I just gotta roll my eyes. Like, this is the society where money is everything, and then when people actually do something for money, they get scoffed at, and then they tell you that money can't buy happiness, although everything requires money, so none of that really makes sense to me. Anyway, that's just my little aside there that yes, they release these movies to make a ton of money, and every single time it works because people don't care what the chuds in their parents' basement think. They want to see dinosaurs and new and bigger and scarier dinosaurs. Finally, I want to talk about the resolution. In the book, Ian Malcolm dies, although he did get resurrected in The Lost World. I forgot about that until I did a little bit of research. Hammond is killed by Compies. I knew that. That's one of the things that Quinn talks about all the time because he read the book as well, our youngest. Is that Hammond was killed. You know, he gets his just desserts because he is the ruthless billionaire who only cares about profit, so Crichton is going to give him his own. But then, if you make him the grandfatherly guy in the movie, you don't want to kill him because that is going to cause a backlash, most likely, from people who are like, why'd you kill the nice grandfather guy who was just trying to make a theme park and zoo with dinosaurs? He didn't make those mistakes. It was Nedry and it was just the fact that things went wrong. Although Ian Malcolm could tell you that the things were going to go wrong. The Jurassic Park is actually firebombed by the Costa Rican Air Force, which is kind of funny to think about. They were just like, you know what? Fuck this. We are going to destroy these things once and for all. We're not going to give anybody the chance to try this again. or put anybody in danger like this again. In the movie, all the main heroes escape, and the island is simply abandoned. They show, like, the island basically just falling into a peaceful stasis as they're flying away in the helicopter. Or, I mean, no, it's they show the birds, I think. That's right. In the last one, they show the birds, and it's like, this is the inevitable conclusion of Jurassic Park, the dinosaurs evolving into birds. So this all makes sense, too, because Crichton didn't want a sequel, but the success of the movie and Spielberg convinced him. They then went in a completely different direction with the sequel from what Crichton wrote, probably because he didn't want to write the book, so he's just like, you know what, I'm going to write this in a way that you're not going to be able to use it for a movie. And then Spielberg was like, we can't use this for a movie, so we got to go in another direction. We got to figure out something else for this second movie. And hey, that's showbiz, baby. One other thing about the difference between the book and the movie ending that I just thought of while I was sitting here and recording. The book more closely resembles the theory that a meteor came down and wiped out the dinosaurs. And then the movie ends up more closely resembling the prevailing theory at the time that they went with, where the dinosaurs, maybe not the prevailing theory, but one of the theories that they talk about in the movie is that the dinosaurs evolved into birds. So it's interesting that they went with that in the movie at the end there to kind of imply that that's exactly what happened to the dinosaurs at Jurassic Park. They quickly evolved at the end into birds, and that's the birds we see flying. Just some thoughts that I wanted to mention that I had thought about while recording here. So that's my discussion of the differences between the movie and the book for Jurassic Park. Did I miss anything that is glaring that you can think of? Let me know in the comments, email me, find me on TikTok, what have you. As always, thanks for listening. You can find me, if you haven't already, at www.slucas.me. I have articles. There's 3 articles up there right now that I've written. This is the second episode of the podcast that I put up there. I'm rebuilding the site from when it was Two Guys Gaming. I also want to migrate all the Two Guys Gaming stuff to the new site. There is a link to our socials, the YouTube, NoobDad131, and TikTok, NoobDad76. I've been exploring Instagram again to see if that's something that I want to start posting to again. I deleted my Facebook. I know it's stupid because Instagram is owned by the same company. When I logged into Facebook, they said, we're going to do some new stuff with your data. And I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. So I'm like, you know what? Fuck off. You've gotten enough data from me and you can do whatever you want with that data, but I'm not going to give you any more data. Although I know that they have feelers all over the place and they're going to get my data somehow. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I also had to download stupid WhatsApp because for whatever reason, that works as a text app when messages don't work, and my wife is over in Europe with her sister and father right now in Ireland, so I had to download WhatsApp, which is another Meta product. My son asked us to download it, but I saw that it was owned by Meta, and I said, nope, I'm not going to download that, but since it's my wife, I downloaded it. It took me a couple of days, and my middle son had to text me and say, Mom wants you to download WhatsApp so that she can talk to you, and I'm like, all right, fine, I'll download it and then delete it when she gets back. I will be back with Noobs Book Club next month with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I haven't put together my schedule yet, so I'm not sure. I think I'm going to end up doing 8 episodes for that because it's July and I have the time, and also it's a pretty in-depth book, so there's going to be quite a bit to talk about there. I will be back with that series within a couple of weeks. As always, be good, stay safe. Have fun. I'll talk to you next time. Bye, guys. S. Lucas. Me. Presents.